When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
When I got up this morning, I certainly did not think I would be spending my day redrawing a page from Fantastic Four number one, published 50 years ago. But during a meeting with my fellow Kids Read Comics organizers, that's right, I put together a show every year called kidsreadcomics.org, a free event promoting comics to young people. You can go to the website for more information. But one of my co-organizers is also the co-owner of a comic book store called Green Brain Comics. It's greenbrain.biz. It's in Dearborn, Michigan. And he's putting on a gallery exhibition of comics work in honor of the 50th anniversary of the release of the Fantastic Four number one by Jack Kirby and Stan Lee. And for this exhibition, he's invited a bunch of artists to take a page from the story, the original first issue, and redraw it in their own style while still paying tribute or staying true to the original source material. I had no intention of being part of this thing initially. I mean, he asked me about it months ago, and I told him I just couldn't do it. But show's opening next Wednesday. He's up against a deadline. He was short one page. And he's my friend, and I want this thing to be successful. Not to say that me being involved makes it successful, but having a completed series of pages does help make it successful, right? So had to help the guy out. He was in a jam, so I wound up spending the whole day working on this page of artwork for the Fantastic Four number one, page 16. It'll be in the show notes for this episode, which you can find if you're listening to this through iTunes or Stitcher. By the way, we're on Stitcher, if you haven't heard yet. That little smartphone radio player where you can stream audio without having to sync your device. Kind of cool. Anyway, if you're listening through those sources and you want to go and find out what I'm talking about, what image I'm talking about, that's at comicsaregreat.com/TPD141. That is in Thunder Punch Daily, episode 141, right? So I wound up spending the day working on this, and this is the big observation for today. This is what my little essay is going to be about, is that, and I've said this before, but it's worth repeating, freelancing or doing work for hire kind of stuff. In this case, it wasn't paid, but this was the kind of spec work you do for a friend or a project you believe in, so it's okay. Illustrators give you a pass for that, but you know, you really shouldn't do stuff for free, right? But when you're doing that stuff, this is your opportunity to experiment. You know, when you're working on a project that is yours, that you own, is a self-published thing, or it's a project where you're getting published, but it's got, you know, you're the sole creative force behind it, and you ultimately own the copyright. You can find it being a little bit an inhibition to do a lot of experimentation, or at least like loud experimentation, right? Your work's going to evolve regardless. So, you know, this, you don't want to go back and revise your work endlessly. We've talked about that before too. But when you're doing stuff that you ultimately don't own, that you can't sell, that you don't retain the copyright to, this is a fabulous time to play out with new techniques. And that's what I did with this piece today. And there's a few observations I want to bring up and hopefully walk away with as a group. Is that one, I was very hesitant to... Well, being in the time jam that I was, I knew I couldn't ink this thing with a crow quill. That's my first choice in doing like really nice comics work is the crow quill. It gives me really clean, crisp lines. It's the style I prefer to work in. If you look at stuff I did like on the front and the replacements, all the stuff I did for Antarctic Press, that was all crow quill, and I really love that style. And the coloring style that I use, that I've been using for the past 10 years, is what some people call a cel-shaded style. It looks like cel-shaded animation. And that was developed in response to the art style that I like working in. I never learned another coloring style. Like you look around at all these different digital colorists, digital painters, they really do. They're starting to look more and more like paintings, like with all these rich textures and layers of brush strokes. Whereas I use the technique where you're essentially like tracing and cutting out with the lasso tool in Photoshop, you know, the highlights and shadows and just filling them with flat colors or with a combination of flat colors and gradients. And this is where I get to drop a little bit of a, and it's not a bomb, but it's something that I haven't been made public yet, but I'll make it public here because it's really not that big of news. But one of the things I've been thinking about for a long time is coloring, going back and coloring my Boulder and Fleet Adventures for Hire mini comic, and doing more issues of that in color and possibly running them on Sugary Cereals, running it as a series of kids' stories on my comics anthology site aimed at young people. And the thing is that Sugary Cereals has like some limited parameters in that it is specifically designed to feel like Saturday morning cartoons from like the 70s and 80s. And you didn't see many black and white cartoons on in the 70s and 80s unless it was a Popeye rerun or like an old Looney Tunes from, were any of the Looney Tunes in black and white? I'm sure some of them were. But like the point is you just rarely see black and white cartoons in that time. So as a rule, Sugary Cereals comics have to be in color. So that meant if I wanted to port Boulder and Fleet over to that, I better color them. But this presented a problem. Will my cel-shaded coloring style work with my brush pen style? Because the Boulder and Fleet comic, like this Fantastic Four piece, was something where I was working under a very strict deadline, a very tight deadline. Full 8-page mini comic cover and story and all done in 7 days or less. I didn't have time to fuss about the art. So I took the brush pen out, the Pentel color brush pen, and I made the deadline because of that tool, because it gives you such affordances for creating like the implication of background, even if you're not doing like a really nice perspective work on your background. It gives you really nice textured lines, those soft dry brush lines to give you a sense of texture, even if you're not shading it. So for months I've been thinking about like, I'd really like to go back and try coloring that thing, but I don't know. Do I need to look into another style? Do I need to look into one of those painterly styles that a lot of cartoonists use? But I don't have time to learn that on top of everything else I got to do. I'm not afraid of a challenge. I'm not afraid of learning something new, but it also comes down to an allocation of resources. With all the stuff I've got going on, do I have time to fit in this next layer of stuff that I got to learn? So that's been a puzzle for me for months now. And this Fantastic Four piece was a great opportunity to say, okay, let's find out what a full comics page would look like if I inked it with a brush pen and I tried coloring it with my cell shaded style. And I think I found a middle ground between what I do on my traditional comics work and what I could do with my brush style work. And it came out of thinking a little bit more simply about a few things. And that simplified thinking came out of working within some limitations that I set on myself arbitrarily for the sake of getting this project done quickly. So when I was looking at the original page by Jack Kirby, now I'm talking about the Fantastic Four work I did today. I was looking at the Jack Kirby page and I was looking at the coloring that was done. Now, Jack Kirby did not do the colors. I'd have to look up who actually did do the colors for this page. But, in the 60s, they worked with a limited color palette. They were working with four color printing, cyan, magenta, black, and yellow, and it had to be a combination of those four colors to build all the colors on the page. And if you look at the technology, man, if you're really curious, look up how, do a Google search for how print coloring was done in the 60s for newspapers. I had a brief stint doing this when I was working on a newspaper in the 90s, in the early 90s. They were just making the transition to digital, and I remember doing a couple editorial illustrations for the paper where I had to use the old technique of using these big pieces of transparency that you either cut out these opaque stickers called ruby lith. You'd cut them out into the shapes of where the colors go, or you'd use a pen. They had a ruby pen, which was just an opaque marker, which you would fill in the shapes. But each transparency was one of those colors, cyan, magenta, black, or yellow. Plus, if you wanted any kind of halftones in between. So now, okay, flesh tones are, let's just pretend it's 30% magenta, 10% yellow, 5% black. Let's say it's that combination. Well, that's three more transparencies you have to add to the whole mix. So it's a very laborious process. And if you think computer coloring is hard today, just imagine what it was like 50 years ago, right? But where was I going with this anyway? Oh, so limited color palette. And I decided that, well, in order to make this thing go fast, let's just work with the original color palette. Let's not reinvent the wheel here. Let's even replicate how Kirby or how the original comic would use, like, and if you look at panel two, this, like I said, this episode will be at comicsaregreat.com/TPD141. If you look at panel two, everybody is washed out in either red or orange. Well, if you look at the original page, that's how they colored it. They would often do like a crowd scene. They would just fill them in with a solid color. And it'd be like orange or a lighter color to push things back into the background. And then a more vibrant color on a foreground character, push them into the foreground. And this was both a way to get the page done in time, but it also gave it kind of like an emotional resonance, an emotional beat to it. It had a little bit of a pop art kind of feel to it, which may or may not have been intentional. I don't know. But I decided that, well, that's interesting that they did it back then. I wonder what it would look like if you did it in computer coloring nowadays. And just play it, use the exact same color palette or as close as you can get to that. And maybe add a little bit of cell shading on top of it just to give it a little bit more three-dimensional punch. But leave it as is. Leave that guy just filled in completely in red. Leave the background guys filled in with orange. And often you would see if characters were in the distance, they'd be filled in with a solid color rather than trying to cut out all the pieces of Rubylith for each individual part of their clothing, which creates kind of a neat visual style to it. But the neat thing is with computers, with Photoshop, you can zoom in so close. You don't need to do that. You could fill in every color on the character. Like if the guy's wearing blue pants, you can make him blue, his red shirt, orange shoes, green hat, whatever. You can do all that no matter how small the character is. But that can create a kind of visual cacophony, right? When you zoom out again, it's like, whoa, what's with all this color? Because after all, in real life, when we look at something in the distance, we get that atmospheric perspective, I think is what they call it. Yeah. Like when you look at a plane up in the sky, it looks kind of fuzzy and kind of grayish because it's so distant. There's so much oxygen between you and the thing. So we have to observe that too. And comics works on a heightened sense of reality. I mean, even if you're doing a realistic or a memoir or a something that's like a little bit more of a nonfiction kind of Ken Burns documentary kind of story, you're still dealing with lines on paper. It's still patently unreal. So you have a little bit of flexibility there. And the big takeaway for me was that in doing that, I realized that what would make a cel-shaded style work with my softer brush style is working in some solid colors like that, working with a more limited color palette than what I would do on, say, something, you know, like the front, like some other professional projects that I've done. Maybe working it down to, you know, like a very, like an actual, create a Photoshop custom color palette where I've only got maybe like 30 colors that I can use for this thing and sticking with that and not hesitating to really emphasize the emotional beats of different sequences by just washing it all in one color. This panel is going to be entirely shades of green. Because, why am I saying this? If you look at the stuff I did with my crow quill work early on, it was clean, it was open, it was vibrant, but it had a level of complexity to it in that, you know, I didn't shy away from doing elaborate backgrounds. You look at my buildings in the backgrounds on the cars, I broke up my French curves and my rapidograph pens and my rulers, and I did all proper perspective. So there's a rigidity to that stuff that you lose when you work with the brush pen. Like when I did the Boulder and Fleet thing, I didn't even try mapping out the backgrounds in proper perspective. I was just trying to meet my deadline. So just crank it out, estimate it, fudge it, get that background implied, but let's not make it the central piece of this thing, how good you can draw backgrounds, right? The characters are what's coming first in this. And I think a more complex world maybe demands a little bit of a wider color palette, and the simplicity of the art style that I landed on for the Boulder and Fleet comic demands a more simplified color palette. This is stuff I could only have found through reflection after the fact. You know, I mean, I suppose I could have sat down and thought really hard for a couple hours before sitting down to color this Fantastic Four thing. But again, it's that wonderful surprise that can happen is just by saying, look, I got to get this thing done fast. Let's just work with the original color palette. The original color palette was limited due to technological restrictions and time restrictions. And in duplicating that with a more versatile tool, I found that it can have a more expressive effect. This kind of goes back to something I've talked about before, this idea that inking is no longer a necessary skill in comics. It was born out of the fact that the technology demanded that you make the lines clear enough that it can be picked up by this big offset camera and then printed on this crummy newsprint so that it looks okay when it gets to the reader. Nowadays, with digital technology, with scanners, that can scan, I don't know how many umpteen million DPI, you can take just fairly clean pencil lines or even not so clean pencil lines and make it look printable. You can make it printable now. So what does that mean for inking? Well, that means that if inking is not necessary, then it means it's that much more of an art form, doesn't it? It has that much more expressive potential. And that's what I kind of tripped upon with the coloring thing today, is that, yes, it's a more versatile tool, but by limiting myself in how I can use it, I have to be more creative about how it ultimately, how it executes my mission here. And there was another level to this, too, is that I did find, and this is kind of like an opinion thing, this is just my particular taste, is that I found that when I had the line art entirely in black, when all the lines on the page that I inked were black with the cel-shaded style, even with the limited cel-shaded style, it didn't seem quite as integrated to me. It felt a little discordant. And when I did the color holds, which took a little bit of extra time, it felt more integrated. It felt more true. It felt like everything kind of harmonized with itself. Quick tip on that, on doing color holds. And for those who don't know what a color hold is, that's just a technique where you actually digitally color the original line art. So the line's originally black, but let's say I'm holding an orange. The line around the orange will be like a darker shade of orange. The line around my hand will be some kind of variation, a darker variation of the colors that are on my hand. Okay, so the fill color. You've seen this before in a lot of kids' books, and a lot of comics nowadays use this. Like whenever you see Green Lantern's ring being used, they'll use color holds around like the energy around his power ring kind of thing, right? But a quick tip on that, I did find that a way to speed up the process of doing color holds is to create a new layer above your line art, or you could even do it below your line art if you want. It doesn't matter where it is, as long as you are switching between this color hold layer and your line art layer. And when you're tracing around with the lasso tool, let's say imagine a guy standing there and he's wearing a button-up shirt, slacks, you know, red sneakers, and a fedora, okay? And I'm going to want to put a color hold on his slacks. And I'm going to have to go in, zoom in, and take the lasso tool and trace around the lines that make up his slacks. And then I'm going to, if your line art is locked on its own transparent layer, you know, and there's a video tutorial that I did where I show how to do that. You just hit fill, and then it fills in the color of the lines. Well, now I'm going to have to go ahead and retrace around his shirt and retrace around his hat, etc. Yeah, that's true. But a way to speed up that process is I create this holds layer, and once that selection's been done on his pants and I filled in the lines on his pants, I leave that selection open. I go to my holds layer. I fill that shape, that selection shape, on the holds layer. Actually, a great one to watch for this would be the Stinkor video. I did a video, an hour-long tutorial on how I color the Masters of the Universe character reimaginings, and I use this technique on that. And then all I have to do is select inverse, and now I can go into quick mask mode by hitting the Q button, and I can trace around his shirt without having to worry about crossing over into the pants area because that's already been masked out in the quick mask mode. Select inverse, fill. And now I can do the same thing with his shirt. Fill in the shirt line art, then go to the holds layer and fill it in there. And now I can do a select command or control selection on that layer, select inverse, and so on. It's kind of hard to describe in audio. I'll link to the video so you can check it out if you're interested in what I've just been talking about. So anyway, yes, experimentation on your freelance work can yield some great results, especially if you're operating under a tight deadline and freaking out to make sure that you get everything done in time. So, who am I? I'm Jersey. Jersey Droz, jdroz.com, Jersey on the Twitters, Jersey Droz on the Google+, Jersey Droz.postress.com, Jersey Droz.tumblr.com, facebook.com/comicsaregreat. I'm all over the darn place. You can find me if you really want to. And news, hey, a week left. At the time of this recording, there's 7 days to sign up for 30 classes in 30 days at leanintoart.com. Leanintoart.com. There's podcasts there too, by the way. Rob Stenzinger and I have been recording a series of podcasts, and we're having some good conversations on that show if you haven't checked it out yet. But the big one, the big news thing is that there's 7 days left to sign up for early bird registration for the 30 classes in 30 days event that we're holding in November. And as of September 23rd, after September 23rd, we're going to raise the rates on signing up for this event. It's going to be a month-long event. Every day during the month of November, we're going to be holding a hands-on participatory workshop or a time-shifted course or a interactive talk, 30 of them. And given that a traditional workshop of this nature would cost anywhere between $40 to $100, the fact that we're giving away 30 of them for $200, if you sign up for the gold tier, it's like, I think the silver tier is like 100 and 150, something like that. It's a steal. It's a really, it's very inexpensive considering what you're going to be getting. We're bringing in a whole bunch of really great cartoonists and teaching artists to lead a lot of awesome presentations and great workshops and tutorials like Photoshop coloring, story theory, line theory, how to use lines properly in your comic stories, or illustration work. Some of these people that we're bringing in are award-winning cartoonists. So there's going to be a lot of really great information to be had. It's going to be a month-long conference online that you can sort of interact with at your own pace. And it's going to be super cool. Even the hands-on workshops, if you can't make it to that specific time, we're going to record them so you can always enjoy them after the fact. Or if enough people say, hey, could you reschedule this? We are happy to consider adding additional workshops to meet everybody's time needs. So like, you know, do one in the morning and one at night or something like that. If somebody's really hungry to get that hands-on experience of the live class experience. So you could sign up at leanintoart.com or 30classes30days.com. And also we updated that page with a video showing you what a class is going to look like and with system requirements. So what kind of software and hardware you're going to need in order to play along with this thing. If you can't be a part of this thing, but you think it's neat and you'd like to support us, a really, really great thing you could do is just tell other people about it. Post a tweet, post a thing on Facebook, post something on Tumblr, say, I think this thing is cool and you should check it out. Rob and I are going to be dumping in some money into advertising for this thing, but heck, a recommendation from a friend is way more powerful than a silly banner ad. You know this. So yeah, it'd be an enormous help to us if you just shared it someplace, just told a friend about it. That'd be super, super cool, and we would really appreciate it. Audio hosting for this show is provided by Kablam, kablam.com. They're great people with a great product. I wouldn't let them support this show unless I believed in what they do. I recommend everybody who's interested in making comics check them out as an option for printing and distributing your work. Music for this show has been provided by my brother Elliot, elliotdroz.com, E-L-I-O-T-T, one L, two T's, .com. Great guy. Of course, he's my brother. And then voiceover was by Tara Platt of TaraPlatt.com, author of Voice Over Voice Actor, a great book on voice acting, which I did the illustrations for. One last little bit of newsy thing. The show's on Stitcher now. So if you're listening after the fact, or if you're listening on one of those smartphones or iPods things that have Wi-Fi and you can't sync it with your computer, you can always get it with that handy little Stitcher app and get it wherever you are without syncing. Pretty cool. So you can always look up Thunder Punch Daily there. Actually, all the podcasts I do are on Stitcher now. So you can just search for my name and you'll get them. So, I will be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. And until then, remember everybody.
Today we learned about the value of trying, even when the odds are against you. Sometimes when people around us aren't playing by the rules or the job seems too big, it's easy to become discouraged. But that's when you really have to stick with it and keep trying, because that's how winners are born. So whether you're playing a game or doing your schoolwork, no matter how far behind you think you are, don't give up. Remember, you can't win if you don't try. See you next time.